But Milanos are like the elitist.
Yeah, you know, yeah, they're too Milanos pretentious for me.
The,
I'm not sure.
The Volvo driving, latte drinking.
I can't hang with that. That's
Ivy League attending liberal cookie.
The escort mission.
Call for host. Call.
All right, Dieter. Man, you get 15s and 16s a lot.
18.
Oh, God. This is not looking good.
Oh, Jay Skeezy. Am I going to have to host again?
Jay Skeezy.
I am.
Jizzle Skizzle.
Welcome to the Escort Mission Podcast. It's another Wednesday. We never say what day of week it is. We don't post it.
It doesn't matter.
Because
it's,
we just...
It's always. We are.
It's the week
But
of
it's Wednesday.
Sometime in May.
If you want to get technical.
2013.
Welcome.
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 To you who has come.
Let's yeah. not go down that road again.
How's your week? Mike.
Josh.
Charles.
Josh.
Co-hosts.
Josh. pineapple.
Oh my god.
Primrose. What are we doing?
Oh man, there's a lot of pineapples in the house on
oh yeah. On strip show. Search.
Strip search.
Oh, Maki pineapple. That's the best.
It's sort of the best, yeah. It's weird happenstance that there happened to be multiple pineapples in the house.
Just go with it, man.
I really like Abby's comic. The fact that she made a comic is kind of a spoiler, huh?
Sort of.
A little bit. Although we've yet to actually say what we're talking about, so...
So those who know what we're talking about probably didn't have it spoiled just then.
And people who don't, just keep on walking. Or something.
Yeah.
We've talked about Strip Search. It's a reality show on Penny Arcade YouTube channel.
PATV.
Yeah.
PATV.
Actually, I like both of those comics. And I kind of like the other one better.
The other one was pretty good, but it was... I didn't think it used the theme as well. I didn't think it was the art was as well done, mm-hmm. and I don't think it was like it wasn't as funny. The other one I literally laughed out loud.
I'm with Chaz.
I laughed out loud, but because it was a cheaper,
it's very
funnier
it's
joke.
Cheap, yeah. But it was funny and extremely well done.
Yeah,
it yeah.
was good. It was
I laughed at the non Abby one, and I actually it took me a little while to appreciate Abby's. But hers was the better, more sophisticated, despite being cheap.
Sophisticated?
Despite being cheap. I don't know, because it wasn't like, I don't know, to me, it wasn't a cheap laugh. I thought it was actually deeper than that, not to give away the subject matter.
I don't
I thought it was like the least immature, obvious way to take advantage of
Maybe I was overwhelmed by the... By the prim and properness of the attire of the subjects in it,
uh-huh.
giving off
a
classier vibe than the joke.
That's because the art was really well
done.
Yeah. It was. And it was hand-drawn, not...
Right, she's the only one,
who's ever done that.
To
right?
hand-draw it. Everybody else is digitally drawing it.
But they are hand-drawing it with like a tablet pen. I don't know if you still call that hand-drawn or what.
That's an interesting point.
Ink-drawn?
Yeah. Hand-drawn with... A pen.
Well, on paper.
On paper.
It was on paper, not yeah. on a stylus or on a...
Yeah. I wonder if like an artist would consider that hand-drawn.
Like IRL created?
Right, yeah.
What are you...
Like no computer needed.
What's the word you use?
It was not CAD.
Right.
It was non-CAD.
Or no vectors.
Yeah.
Hey!
Love that show. Oh, right. We should like start
Our
a show
weeks.
Or something.
How about current events or something?
Current events or something. Let's talk about current events... I wonder if I had any current events.
Okay, I got one.
Yeah, talk about it.
Is it a meme?
No.
Because I don't have a meme. I was hoping someone would have a
meme. No, it's just a random event that I thought was hilarious that Spotify had a security hole in their web app that allowed you to download any of their 20 million songs without DRM.
Whoa.
By just installing a Chrome plugin called Downloadify.
Ooh, specifically written to exploit this.
Yeah. Now, I don't know how long the exploit existed. I'm really curious because it existed, A, long enough to create a Chrome plugin dedicated to exploiting it and then upload it and then be available on the market working for a little while.
Yeah.
But I think it was only on the market working for maybe 10 hours or... I'm not sure. I haven't done the full research on the fallout, but it existed for a while. I'm curious if it existed long enough for anyone to pull down like their entire music archive and then post a
their entire
20 like, million song torrent.
You would have to have insane bandwidth to pull down like the 100 million songs they have or something.
Anyway,
that's ridiculous.
I just thought that was hilarious that they could have such a critical failure.
Yeah, in their that like stuff is main technology.
So easy to do, man. Like software is fucking.
You could just turn on Audacity and hit record, and boom, you're stealing their music.
Yeah, that's true. But then you re-encode it. It's true. Just not absolutely perfect. But it would sound pretty good.
Like there've always been ways to do this.
That's
you know?
the analog hole.
Yeah,
which sounds dirty, but it just means like you can always point a camera at the screen.
Did you rent that at some point?
Yeah.
Did you think you may have rent that?
I don't have any actual current events to talk about, but I do have, just in terms of starting a fight, Deadspin has posted their list of cookie rankings, so I want to see what we agree with.
Cookie
rankings? Oh, like, how good are these cookies? Okay.
It's a cookie ranking.
I was still in the mode of, like, reading a Firefox headline about them blocking by default third-party cookies from websites.
Oh, ha, no.
And advertisers are super angry at that shit, apparently. Anyway.
This is literal cookie rankings.
Yeah, just real quick, another Gawker site, I forget what it was, did the same thing with, I think, just desserts are general, and it came down between like cake versus pie in the end.
Oh yeah,
and I think pie won, which I'm very happy about.
As it should.
My problem with this is as a concept before we get to it, is whether or not it's like name brands or whether it's like
this is
cookie
a problem
styles because cookie styles vary
this.
In quality.
True. Not all chocolate
style,
chip is made
right?
the same.
When I say the word snickerdoodle, it can mean like 15 different things.
True.
Like my favorite snickerdoodles. Like own face, like rule all motherfuckers, right? But you're not a fan of snickerdoodles because you think of a different thing when you know when I say snickerdoodle.
I know what a snickerdoodle is, and I know that a molasses cookie kicks the shit out of the best possible snickerdoodle.
Not even close.
Okay, all right, come on, just freaking read the list. Right. This could go
but
on
if
forever.
The brand names, the list is like Oreos, 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 Oreos.
So this mixes brand names and non-brand names. Completely. So
ugh, fucking chaos, it's, man.
That's hard to do, though.
It's invalid now. It's illegitimate.
I can't even like rank Oreos with real cookies.
Okay, but right, I can. Here we go. But I can, so go for it.
Here we go. So we have tied at 1,006 for worst cookie.
Oh, worst cookie. Oh,
for
God.
Worst cookie tied at 1,006.
Dude, Fig Newtons are the shit. Shut your face.
Fortune cookies and biscotti. They have those both tied for worst.
Okay, biscotti alone, shit. Biscotti dipped in something good.
So he addresses that. He says, every cookie tastes good dunked in liquid.
Granted.
I'm going to have to.
Granted.
Invalid.
I'm going to have to put Fig Newtons like way below both of those.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I got to say, a biscotti is better than a fortune cookie. Like a fortune cookie is mealy mouth. It's barely above like pasta dough. You know what I mean? It's just like
I'm gonna disagree.
Vaguely sweet.
I'm going to disagree. I'm going to go with fortune cookie because biscotti on its own is like. Kind of, it's like eating shit.
I'm gonna have to defer to my initial problem. Like biscotti, I've had some biscotti that's like literally eating paper, like way worse than a fortune cookie. Uh-huh. Cookie. And I've had some that's like, oh, this is so good. This is like a decadent almond cookie.
Yeah,
you know,
almond cookie is strong. Those like those Chinese. I mean, Chinese fortune cookies, total shit. But those Chinese almond cookies,
those are good.
Those are quite good. That's a strong cookie.
Here's the issue we're gonna run into every time.
All right, here we go. Okay. So. Those are 1,006. The next one up is 21. So there's a big gap there. They're like, those are that bad.
Wow.
This is like one guy.
Yeah. It's Deadspin's whatever.
Like they put a poll and people voted. Kind
21.
Of
Madeleines. Are you a cookie or a cake? You must choose.
I don't even know what that is. I've heard it a lot.
Madeleines. They're like a little like squishy, very doughy, fluffy, moist.
They're all right.
Thing that's this big and is vaguely cookie shaped. Yeah.
They're all right.
Still.
Milano's at 20. 19, Nilla Wafers. That's wrong. Milano's are definitely better than Nilla Wafers.
I don't know.
Dude, Nilla Wafers are awesome, especially
Nilla
with
Wafers
milk.
Are pretty good.
A Milano is a Nilla Wafer with chocolate in the middle.
I haven't had enough Milanos. I haven't had enough Milanos. So
discussion owned.
All right. Milanos are like the elitist Milanese.
Yeah,
for,
you know, yeah, they're too Milanos pretentious for me.
I'm not sure.
The Volvo driving, latte drinking.
I can't hang with that. That's
Ivy League attending liberal cookie.
I'm not sure chocolate's needed in my Nilla wafer. I mean, that's why it's got Nilla in the name.
Right.
It's
not chocolate.
Ebony
wafer.
And ivory, you racist motherfucker. You got to put them together.
All right.
Okay, shortbread at 18, a black and white cookie at 17. Meh, I'm fine with those.
Wait, I love shortbread.
Yeah, like, I put shortbread above black and white.
He's got shortbread at 18.
Excuse me. Shortbread, like, are the only Girl Scout cookies I ever get anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Like, are you over your...
Well, you're going to be mad at the rest of this list, then.
All right.
Just to presage right,
because
that
it's going
to
be like going. Girl Scout.
Yeah, yeah, keep going.
So, yeah, shortbread, black and white, 16, sugar cookie, 15, peanut... Sugar cookie is... Also bullshit. That some should be them, much further down.
Some of them are good.
Yeah, it really depends.
15 totally. Peanut butter cookie. Way bullshit. Peanut butter cookie is definitely a top 5 cookie. Either of you, thoughts on the peanut butter? I feel strongly about this one.
My favorite peanut butter cookie recipe is an amazing peanut butter cookie. It's 1 cup of peanut butter, 1 cup of sugar, 1 egg. That's it. Mix it. And
don't do anything to it. Just down the hatch.
Push it down with a fork and put it in the oven, uh-huh. And it makes a cookie. Like, it doesn't need flour or anything. Yeah. Like, all other peanut butter cookies, like, taste like flour
tastes
now
like flour,
compared
yeah.
to that. It is an ultimate peanut butter cookie.
Nice. Nice.
I agree with Chaz. I think it should be higher up, but I don't know. I gotta hear the other ones.
Okay, here we go. 14, Snickerdoodle. Sorry.
Ooh.
I love
that's incredibly
so
low.
Much. 14.
I'm actually really surprised.
Yeah. 13, macaroon.
No, fuck that.
I don't even know
Snickerdoodles
what
are better than macaroons. Macaroon? No.
Macaroon is like pure coconut with like one edge dipped in chocolate.
Those are
sometimes.
Terrible. Those are the ones that are at 1,000.
I kind of like a macaroon, but yeah, I think that
coconut
it is.
Does not belong in a cookie.
I love
that. I disagree with that, but yeah. I still don't think macaroons are better.
12 is burger cookie, B-E-R-G-E-R, burger. I don't even know what that is.
Nope, don't know.
11, ginger snap. Ginger snap has a lot of range. Like those
ginger
can
snaps
be
yeah.
so good.
Can be terrible and they can be amazing. So
I'm not sure I've had terrible ginger snaps. No,
they
ginger
can be
snaps are pretty good.
If they're not gingery enough,
I
like if it's just like vaguely ginger back store
you know
bought.
I think
like
most
whatever.
Of the ones store-bought, I've had they've all been homemade. I haven't had nearly as
you
many store bought.
I just had some store bought boxed ginger snaps and they are so fucking good. They're like better than the little cinnamon Teddy Grahams. They're just like
oh my god, Teddy Grahams.
They're
Teddy
so
Grahams.
Good.
I've had those in forever.
Fucking a cat turd is better than cinnamon Teddy. What are you talking about? Those are like the
what's
worst.
Wrong with you? Cinnamon Teddy Grahams rule.
But that's like not that doesn't even deserve consideration on this list.
As far as like
that's a breakfast cereal, not a cookie.
It makes an amazing breakfast
hey,
cereal.
Choco Crisp cereal is excellent. All right, and it at least it was when I was 10.
All right. So yeah, 10 oatmeal raisin. It's total bullshit that oatmeal raisin is above oatmeal cookie. Wrong. Oatmeal cookie, pure oatmeal
when
cookie.
When did we say oatmeal?
We
didn't we already
yet.
Do?
No, oatmeal? We haven't done oatmeal at all.
Then it's fucking not on here, which is even worse. That's
no,
insanity.
I think it's implying that all oatmeal are oatmeal.
I
raisin.
Don't think I've ever had just an oatmeal cookie before.
Then you have not lived, sir.
Apparently.
I don't know.
Oh, man.
I'm not a big fan of an
I
oatmeal.
I love cookie. Myself an oatmeal cookie.
Like,
okay.
Oatmeal usually does not improve a cookie. You know, like, I've had a lot of oatmeal chocolate chip.
Yeah.
I think they'd be better without the oatmeal. I've
maybe.
Had,
yeah.
I've had, like, oatmeal other bullshit.
I just like oatmeal nuts or just a pure oatmeal cookie. Awesome.
Huh.
Awesome.
Okay.
Love me an oatmeal
what
cookie.
Else?
Fudge Stripes at 9. We're into the top 10 here.
I don't even know what that is.
I think that's a brand name. I think
yeah,
that's a
it's
Keebler.
It's a brand name. Yeah, those are pretty good. Those are they're like the
are
just
they
the flat round
it's a
cookie
flat
that
donut.
Have like stripes of
those are
chocolate
bullshit.
Over them.
Yeah, those
no,
are total.
Those
bullshit.
Are like 25.
What yeah. are you talking about? Those are good.
No, those are not that good,
dude. Teddy Grahams are a million times better than those.
No, fuck
Teddy
you. Grams. No, Teddy Grahams are below that. No.
8 Florentines. Anybody know what a Florentine is?
I isn't that the little
chocolate
butter cookie that's kind of like shaped differently?
I don't know.
I don't
7 Malamars. That's a brand, I think. Or is that a type?
They get those on the East Coast. They talk about them on Seinfeld.
Yeah, I don't know.
Right?
I don't.
Samoas at 8. Girl Scout cookie.
Yeah.
Those are strong. That's a strong Girl
actually,
Scout cookie.
Actually, those have coconut in them, huh?
Actually, Samoas are sort of like, the Keebler ones, the fudge stripes, except with coconut. But they have,
like, caramel. Like cookie, caramel, coconut, and then, like, chocolate drizzle.
So those are, like, better fudge stripes. Fudge stripes are, like, weak Samoans.
That guy just likes stuff that's round and has, like, a drizzle pattern drawn across
the top.
That's
not a bad thing. Those are good cookies, man.
Yeah, they're fine.
Number five, he has monster cookies, which he says peanut butter, M&M's, oatmeal, possibly horse parts, etc. So he's just saying like a cookie with a ton of shit in it, like basically a candy bar that's held together with flour.
Sometimes those homemade cookies that are like oatmeal cookies, but also have
a million different things.
That's like M&M's, a kitchen sink cookie. It's a dump cookie.
That could be good.
Dump cookie.
Like we said, they range.
It could be good, but it's. I don't feel like that's top five given some of the other.
It's
items
so hard
on the list.
To say that that's better than all these known quantities.
I definitely had more failures in that category than successes.
Number four, tagalongs. Another Girl Scout. I'm not sure which one that is. Is that the...
I think those are the peanut butter ones, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Those are fine.
Those are good. I don't know if they would be in my top five, though.
Tagalogs. I don't think there's an N.
Tagalongs.
They're Tagalongs.
That's what it has on
here. No, Tagalogs.
No.
You're thinking of Tagalog, the Filipino language, dude.
Josh is going to have his mind blown when he searches Tagalog.
It's tag along, as in you are tagging along with something.
Really? Yeah,
man. Yeah. Boom.
Yeah.
All right, move on.
Your world has now been
expanded. No, they're Tagalogs is what they are.
I can say she's a brick house in Tagalog. Siang bato bahay.
You've done that before.
Yep. There you go.
That's useful.
Tagalongs number four. Number three, Thin Mints. Thin Mints are strong.
Thin Mints are bomb.
Very strong cookie.
Thin Mints
Josh
are like,
is over Thin Mints. I can feel it.
Thin Mints are number one on the overrated fucking cookie list.
You know, your 10-year-old self would not have said that. Your 30-year-old self says that. I know that for certain. Like, the overly sweet, overly chocolatey cookies are shit we loved as a kid and maybe don't love as much now because our tolerance for sweets is lower.
I don't think those are overly
I think that's
sweet.
Why.
They're
because
not that sweet.
I think they're pretty... It's just a big chocolate cookie, basically.
It's
with
but
mint.
It's got, it, yeah, it's a mint chocolate cookie. It's crispy and delicious.
It's like eating a crispy mint you get from Olive Garden at the end. Those little
Andy's mint. Yeah,
it
it's
would
a chocolate
be,
mint.
It would be improved by having Junior Mint shit in the middle, you know?
No, it would not.
What?
Yeah,
they're fine how they are. No, they're fine.
No.
But you can,
Oreos
you just,
are better than Thin Mints,
that
period.
That is false.
Period.
Oreos are nowhere near as good as Thin Mints.
I think I might agree with him on that
you're
one.
You're happy.
Though.
Oreos number two.
Oh.
Oreos.
Okay, chocolate chip wins then.
One of the only things
I agree of course
with,
chocolate chip is number one. It has to be.
Yeah,
chocolate chip, by far, number one.
They were pretty agreeable on the top three, didn't they? Like,
it's very safe, top three.
Those are real popular cookies.
Tagalongs
are these peanut butter patty things covered in chocolate.
Yeah.
They're like peanut butter Thin Mints.
Yeah, I don't think those are in my top five.
Oreo is the one that I put at the like overrated Emperor's New Clothes cookie. I do not buy into the Oreo.
These are some controversial opinions I did not know existed.
I completely admit that like Oreos are one of those things that might just have this psychological power over me from childhood experience. You know what I mean?
And the Oreo's a ritual more than it is a flavor.
And that
it's
like but there's power
sitting
in that ritual.
Down and
no,
having
no, no.
a cup of milk and twisting it off and eating it your
that's
way.
What people say, but I don't think that's true. I think it's purely like just like I ate them when I was a kid, so I like the flavor.
Yeah,
because I love the flavor. Like I don't care for the ritual. I just want crumbled Oreos in my shake. Like the best shakes are Oreo shakes.
Okay, I want
Oreos
ranking.
On my vanilla ice cream. Like that's the best way to eat vanilla ice cream is with Oreos on it. You know, I want to like just eat a whole roll of Oreos,
dude,
with a cup of milk. Like, just put them in your mouth.
But those three examples all involve the cookie and something else.
It will
not just the cookie.
Well, all these cookies, it's implied that I'm eating them with coffee or milk.
None
or
that is not implied at all. What are you talking about?
This is a cookie ranking.
I can't eat sweet things.
He disqualified biscotti because it's only good if you
I can't
put it in
eat
liquid.
Anything sweet without a drink. To,
then
to
okay, then you can't really make a judgment on this because this is cookie only.
Cookie ranking.
Cookie ranking only. Well,
you can't be intuitive.
Not cookie and stuff.
You can't disqualify me for how I eat cookies.
No, but your valuation of this list is dinged.
Well, what kind of time limit would you impose on yourself for drinking a beverage? Like,
look,
I can eat an Oreo alone and
you
be
walk
okay
into
with that.
A room and you have all of these cookies laid out before you, but nothing to drink. Which
no,
one do you choose?
I have my.
No, you do
no, you
not.
Don't. No, you don't.
This is my hypothetical scenario.
I would take a lot of the cookies with me as I left.
No, you can't take them out. You have to eat them in the room. That's it. All right.
There you go. Cookie rankings.
That was deliciously controversial. Cookie fights.
I think maybe a recurring feature on the show should be some we ranking each foods. Find. No, we each find like a ranking list and we argue about other people's rankings.
I feel like there
rankings.
Were a million cookies missing from that list.
Well, what's missing? Molasses cookie for sure is missing. That's a fucking top five cookie.
Agreed. Agreed.
God damn.
Although I think lots of people...
Biscoff cookies.
Yeah. They lump molasses in with...
Biscoff is a shortbread.
Ginger snaps,
basically,
I think.
Right?
Or snickerdoodle.
Isn't Biscoff a shortbread?
You could call it that. But, I mean, people usually...
I could call it that.
People usually think of shortbread as much lighter colored and more like buttery. Yeah.
It's fucking buttery, though. That like Biscoff spread you gave me, holy shit.
Yeah, but it's closer to a molasses cookie though. It's darker and it's more of a rich, interesting flavor.
True.
You know? Like we said, butter cookies or shortbread cookies or whatever, any of these like vary in category. It's a brand name. It's its own thing. It's like saying an Oreo is a chocolate cookie.
Right.
It's not just a chocolate cookie.
Interesting.
It's its own thing.
I'll try to come up with another list for us to fight about next week.
It's good. Did we all agree on the number one, though? The chocolate chip is the best?
It's a safe choice. It's not my favorite cookie.
Is it your favorite cookie, Josh? Like the best chocolate chip cookie?
I think it's like the agreeable American favorite cookie. Like, I like chocolate chip cookies a lot.
Yeah, you're not going to.
But you would choose an Oreo
like
over
if
that.
Like, if we were working on a top 10 list, I would let it be number one.
I would choose.
It's almost like we're all afraid to disagree with chocolate chip being the best one.
No, I disagree. It's not my favorite cookie. I would choose an oatmeal cookie and a molasses cookie above a chocolate chip cookie.
Animal cookies.
What?
Dude.
Animal crackers?
I can't believe animal crackers on there. Animal crackers are the
like
shit.
Like the pink and white ones?
Ooh, and the,
oh, shit. The pink and white ones.
Yeah, the mothers.
Those are the shit.
The mothers. Those are not good. Oh,
and
those have
about,
to be the top five.
Those are definitely top 10.
What about Little
least?
Debbie oatmeal pies?
Are you,
really
you're kind of moving away from cookie zone at that
those
point.
Those are Oreos. Come on.
Yeah.
It's like cream
Maybe
filling.
Maybe I don't know what that cookie is.
It's a cream filling cookie.
It's like the big, it's like a big Oreo, except it's like brown soft.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Substance. I don't even
you
know,
don't
what,
know
that
what that is. Mm. Oh my God. It's like the most sugar and Crisco you can put in your mouth at
yeah,
once.
It's like the Monte Cristo of cookies.
What about a Nutty Bar? Have you had Nutty Bars? Those are pretty
Sounds
good.
Sounds familiar.
Those are good. They come in like the super flimsy saran wrap foil exterior where you kind of like breathe on it and it disintegrates. And they're like, they're four wafer. It's like wafer with like peanut butter schmutz on the inside and then like dipped in chocolate.
Schmutz. That's good. I like
that
word.
It's like a big Kit Kat without as much chocolate exterior.
I'm going to have to bring up another one I just had from Fresh and Easy because I was... like craving some Oreos, and right next to the Oreos were these random brand like Fox ginger creams.
Uh-huh.
And they looked like Oreos, except they were like ginger cookies with cream in the middle and like way higher quality.
That sounds good.
They were fucking amazing. Yeah.
They've got all those weird English brands at Fresh and Easy.
Yeah.
Because it's Tesco.
Dude, when Mike... on Strip Search a couple eliminations ago just sat and ate like a whole couple rows
vanilla Oreos.
Oh man,
too.
That
That's
was insane.
Disgusting.
That is when I went straight out great. And like looking for Oreos.
Dude, right, advertising works.
Product placement. I won't say who, but one person I introduced Biscoff spread to, which if you don't know is this jar of like peanut butter like substance that is made up of basically just mashed up cookies. It's cookie butter, essentially.
Yeah, fucking amazing.
And it's really amazing. So one person I introduced it to immediately went out and bought some Biscoff spread and a box of Biscoff cookies and just ate like the whole box of Biscoff
God,
cookies.
Who would do that?
And the whole jar of spread on top of the...
Yeah, dipping a cookie in a spread made of that cookie, that's a dream come true right there, man.
It sounded brilliant to me.
Yep. Yeah. On our honeymoon, I'm going to out my wife on this. She probably won't be happy. I hope she's not listening. At one point, she took we got like a wine and cheese plate delivered to our room by, a well-wisher. And, it's a bunch of cheeses and it's got like some hard cheeses and some soft cheeses, and then a bunch of fruit and, you know, bottle of champagne or something like that. And we're eating it, and she took a piece of hard cheese and spread like boursin on the cheese and ate it. I'm like, did you just put cheese on your cheese?
Totally.
Like, yeah. What happens on
God,
on
she's
your
gonna
honeymoon
murder you over that one, man.
Stays on your honeymoon.
That sounds so brilliant. We should do mailbag because we got mailbag.
Yeah, let's do it.
Hit it, Charles.
Cheese. Mailbag, mailbag. I'm going to punch a guitar now.
Donk. All right. So from Kevin Crawford. I don't know who this joker is. He says, hi, guys. Hello, Kevin. I just listened to the following story on the 60 Second Science podcast about how video games sharpen elderly minds. And we listened to that earlier. My wife likes to do crossword and jigsaw puzzles to keep her mind sharp. She is not interested in the games our kids are playing, e.g. Assassin's Creed, Halo, Skyrim. I thought you might recommend some adult-friendly, not necessarily adult-rated, Xbox or PC games. She's not a big fan of science fiction, though some of the books she likes happen to be set in the future. Most of what she reads lately is 17th century mysteries. She also likes spy novels and the, quote, sparkly vampire series. Love the show, Kevin. Also, P.S., he has a show segment idea for us, YouTube channel reviews, and P.P.S., he demands more movie reviews from Josh, please.
Nice.
So, you have a fan on
I'm sorry I haven't watched like 30 more movies in the last
Machine
week
gun us some reviews.
So, first of all, if you Google games for adults, you get...
You don't want to do that.
You get a lot of NSFW results, and I had to close that browser window quickly when I did that. And I was like, "Oh, that was dumb." As soon as I did that.
Have you not Googled before? Come on.
I just was not thinking.
All right, I'm going to mention off the bat. The first one I thought of, I'm not sure if it's appropriate. It is a little puzzly, and I think it's just like a sleeper hit for Xbox. It's called Elo Milo. Mm-hmm. It's adorable, it's kid friendly, but it's really becomes a kind of difficult platformer, mm-hmm. which has great music, great graphics. It's like a cheap downloadable Xbox, the first few levels are easy, and it has neat mechanics where the world like kind of turns in three dimensions while you're traversing the platforms. Like you walk to the side, and now gravity is always towards the object that you're walking on, so you're walking around things. It's weird,
dude.
Oh, speaking of cookies,
holy shit. Oh,
man,
ask and you shall receive.
Best wife ever.
Cookies.
Thank
you.
Oh my god,
wow,
a triangle of chocolate chip cookies just showed up.
Thanks, Robin.
Nice.
Yeah. The number one cookie
we
just
need to
showed
have
up.
A big argument about the top 10 groups of money and then hope that one of them shows up.
My favorite group of money is millions of monies.
Oh, the next thing that I thought
I'm sorry
of,
what were we talking about? I can only think about cookies now.
Yeah, we're gonna have to eat some cookies. The next thing that I thought of that I think is even more appropriate is two Steam games by not Telltale but somebody like Telltale, and their puzzle agent, that's what it's called. It might be Telltale. Puzzle Agent and Puzzle Agent 2. They're like adventure mystery games where the dialogue is really funny and cute and witty, and it's kind of like hand-drawn, cartoony, with crayons almost, maybe, art style. And it totally has direct like jigsaw or crossword type puzzles involved in it, where you just... that could easily be implemented on paper some of the time, interspersed with dialogue with quirky Midwest town characters.
Yeah.
Interspersed with navigating traversing the environment by just clicking on things. So it is like number one game for like my dad or somebody like that. Good for non-gamers, puzzly, pretty cheap, and a ton of fun. All right, what do you guys recommend?
So the ones that came to mind for me were Portal and Portal 2.
Definitely.
Are both really good ones. They're pretty gamey, and they do require, you know, some facility with dual stick.
And they are set in a science sci-fi world, which is something she apparently
is
not a fan of.
Yeah, but the writing is really, really strong, and they're not... They're set in a sci-fi world, but it's not that sci-fi centric. It's not like a Mass Effect or something where it's super space aliens and stuff. It's basically just a situation your character's in and some great dialogue.
And personally, I think Portal 2 is easier to start with for newcomers. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's tempting to say start at the beginning, but I think Portal 2 is a lot more forgiving and, mm-hmm. and welcoming mm-hmm. to non-gamers.
Yeah, I think it just depends on... I mean, I hate that I'm going to say this, but kind of how hardcore you want to be about the Portal franchise. That if you just want to play a fun game and get into it, I agree with Josh. But if you want to be...
You can play the second one, or the first one after the second one. I think it'd be fine. I mean, technically it's a little bit out of order, but I don't think it's that big a deal.
Eh. Well, once again, yeah. I mean, if you're choosing to play the second one before the first one, then you already are not caring about being that hardcore, so it's irrelevant.
Yeah. Yeah. The Sims, I think, is probably a decent option. I haven't really played it, but I think that that's a good one in that zone. Trying to come up with these made me think of all the games that are on my shelf and how few of them
are welcoming.
Don't involve guns and gunplay and weaponry as a major gameplay element, as like the primary gameplay element. So few. Mirror's Edge came to mind, which does have a bunch of guns and also requires Mirror's Edge is a shitty choice. Forget I said that.
Yeah, that you need to be really good at games to
I don't know, that one's fun. That's but it's a very gaming game. Two more that are not for Xbox or PC. These are both Nintendo DS games, but they might have one of the a DS.
Professor Layton.
Yep, Professor Layton.
Buy a DS for it. Yeah, find a used one. $100 or something.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they're only on the newest 3DS or whatever.
Oh, yeah. They're on
I think they're on the
DS.
Older ones. So you might DS be able Lite. To find an older...
Like $50 on Craigslist or whatever.
Random DS. Yeah. Or a DS. Get a DS Lite, not a DS, because the DSs are fucking ugly and the screens look terrible. But anything DS Lite or DS XL or...
Yeah, DS Lite or newer.
Or newer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Professor Layton is like, it's a puzzle game, but it's super cute by all accounts. You know, just like it's a kind of like an absent-minded professor and his like this little kid who follows him around, who's like an assistant, and they solve mysteries in the little town. That one's good. And then Hotel Dusk, which was one of these kind of more a novel than a game. You actually hold the DS open like a book instead of flipping so the screens are on top of each other, they're next to each other, left and right, and you kind of read it as a book instead of... And it's kind of choose-your-own-adventure-y, affect the story a little bit, I gather, and that's supposed to be pretty good. Those are what came to mind. Mike, have any thoughts?
Yeah, I can't think of too many specific games. I didn't do a lot of thinking about this, and I'm having a hard time coming up with stuff on the spot. The thing that I always think of when I just think of a game that's like accessible, because I feel like the general topic here is accessibility, are the Lego games. And I should know because I've played every single one of them almost. And while they are pretty gamey and they can be set in a sci-fi world, you know, especially if you're playing like the Star Wars version, but they're very forgiving. Death doesn't mean anything. They have drop in and out co-op, so you know you can play alone, and then someone can come and play with you for a while, and then drop back out again. You know, their kids love them, adults love them. You know, it's the one series of games I've played like multiple iterations of with my wife, who is not nearly the gamer that I am. So I would heartily recommend them. They're all good. You can pretty much choose, you know, your favorite franchise, and go with that.
Yeah, I think that's a great example.
Yeah.
What are the major franchises that are available?
So there's Star Wars, there's Indiana Jones, there's Batman, Pirates of the Caribbean, Lord of the Rings. I know that there's on the Wii U, which sucks because I want to play it, is the basically GTA Lite, but set in the Lego universe. And then I think the next one that's coming out is Marvel, like Avengers or something like that. And Harry Potter. There's also two Harry Potter games. So yeah, those are all good. Those are all worth playing, and they just get a little more refined every time they come out with one. And the only other thing is just more of a general thing. I mean, I don't know how much she would be into graphic adventures, but you mentioned PC, and PC is like the platform for graphic adventures. You know, like, yes, there's the old classics like Secret of Monkey Island and King's Quest and Space Quest and Police Quest and all those, but there's kind of been a renaissance lately with all of the with the indie scene. Like, lots of people are trying to reinvigorate this market and make new games in that vein, and I'm blanking on names of ones that are out right now, but there's a lot of them, and a lot of them are free. Because it's kind of, it's almost, it's not like exactly the Hello World of, you know, indie game making, but they, you know, at least for the people who like to write, they're not overly gamey. They're more like writing dialogue and puzzles.
There is a, the current Humble Bundle is Double Fine Humble Bundle, and it comes with a non-Kickstarter pre-order of their Kickstarter.
The Something Age. The, yeah.
Yeah, the Something Age, I forget. Uh-huh. And it's the first time I saw like a preview of what that game actually is. It looks adorable. The story looks really cute and good.
Yeah.
Wow. So I'm kind of excited.
What are the
now.
Other games in there? That sounds.
The three that you get definitely for like giving 1 cent or whatever are Costume Quest, Stacking, mm-hmm. and
God, Stacking is such a good game.
And Stacking. Psychonauts.
Stacking, so, yeah.
Out of that list, I was going to say right now you can get Stacking for basically free or for a dollar or whatever. $8 is the average last I looked. And Stacking is, yeah, an appropriate game for this suggestion. It's a cute, it's kind of a third-person...
adventure game?
Adventure.
Kind of action-y.
It's kind of a point-and-click adventure game, except... third person.
You're basically
it's very similar to a point and click adventure.
The story is really mm-hmm. cute and told with maybe no dialogue.
Just yeah, I think it's just like, sound effects and
like narration and sound effects
visuals,
and music.
Yeah,
maybe narration.
Very stylized.
But you're basically a family of Matryoshka dolls.
Matryoshka dolls, yeah.
And or you're one of the. You're a stack essentially, and you, or one, and you go around and you stack with others, and that's how you interact, is you can like stack with
if you need to be a police officer to get past yeah. a certain area, then God, you go and just stack into
such a brilliant game yeah. the more I think about it, like
it's really
just the
cool.
idea, like it's so unique.
Yeah, the idea was created during one of their idea jam things or whatever, where they stopped in the middle of some big project they were all working on. And they all took like 2 weeks mm-hmm. to just work on a huge list of random bullshit ideas, just prototyping a bunch of games. And whenever they do breaks like that, they end up coming up with several like really good
their
games.
Their next three games.
Their
yeah.
next
yeah.
three, yeah, several games. Yeah. So, get Stacking. What
that's
else?
Excellent, yeah.
Any other suggestions?
I think that's a pretty good list.
Yeah,
good list.
That's plenty.
Good list.
Thank you for the email, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks. I'm glad you like my movie reviews. All right, we did mail. We did a little bit of news. Any more news before
the cookie battle?
All right. Oh, I had some news. Let's see. I thought this was a hilarious gaming news headline. Apparently, Nintendo like said that the Wii U sales were not as good as they had hoped, and one of the reasons is. Consumers thought the Wii U was a peripheral for the Wii.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Like customer confusion. They thought it was just this controller for this older console.
Many people thought that.
They didn't realize
it was a new console. I can almost see it as like an upside down U controller or something
actually,
that you hold in your hands.
I forget which show, but like it was either like Ellen or one of the first shows that they went on, like Good Morning America or something, the hosts made that mistake, and like the Nintendo rep who was demoing it had to correct them.
Really?
Oh,
like,
nice.
On the air, yeah.
Wow, foreshadowing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also the...
But it totally makes sense. It's terrible branding. Calling it Wii U?
Well, I think a lot of... I think there was much debate over calling it the Wii to begin
such
with.
Such a weird name.
That's fine. The Wii is fine. Because it's new and unique and whatever, as just from a branding perspective, like it sounds weird. It's a weird name, but
although
it's
it
at
is
least
memorable,
a thing, and it's its own thing. If they had called it the Wii 2, everyone would have instantly known it was the sequel
or the Super Wii.
But I mean, like Xbox 360. I mean, their numbers. How about PlayStation Vita. What the fuck is Vita, right?
Yeah.
And like, it's not selling well.
Lots of times they're just arbitrary words or letters. I mean, cars are letters.
Yeah.
Is it completely nonsensical? Usually video cards are like sometimes totally random numbers.
That, oh my God, I hate lower, video card. Like
lower than the last naming schemas. Better.
Yeah, anything that is that goes by a random alphanumeric code is not good branding to me.
Video card stuff, there are just too many options. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Off topic, I don't know if you'll think this is totally normal. You already knew this, Chaz, but in Amsterdam, I saw a 7 Series BMW taxi and could not believe it.
Yeah.
I was like,
is that like an $80,000 car or something?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. More. They start at 75 or whatever.
Wow.
Like every taxi is an E-Class.
Like every taxi is a
Mercedes E-Class.
Goddamn nice Mercedes or BMW or whatever in Berlin, too.
Don't people like vomit in the back seat of those things, though? That seems like a risky investment.
Yeah. I don't know how that works.
Huh.
But. Craziness.
In Europe, Mercedes is a full-line automaker. Like, they're a Ford, basically. Hmm. They make, in the U.S., they're a luxury automaker. And they make those luxury cars, but they also make, like, super tiny, compact, inexpensive city commuter cars and, you know, all kinds of other crazy shit
and
that
trucks
we don't get.
And stuff.
Yeah.
I had some news.
Go for it.
So, this last weekend, apropos of none of what we've been talking about, I did another wedding gig where I played guitar for a stranger's wedding. Cocktail hour, actually, not the actual wedding.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting. You know, I do this like once a year max, so that's why it's always significant because I'm like, I never think I'm ever going to get another job because I do absolutely no advertising or trying to get jobs. I'm just on a list at my college, and they have a list of musicians, and they call people up, and sometimes I get called, and sometimes that leads somewhere. But
you could like set up a recurring Craigslist ad or something.
I know, I could. That's the thing. I could do more than nothing. But
that's effectively like it costs you nothing.
Right. But there's like no visibility. Like and I'm an idiot. I don't even ask the few people who've come to me through it like how they came through it. Like, did they go to UCSD?
Right.
Like, I don't know why else you'd even know this list exists. It's I'm constantly amazed and baffled that I get any phone calls at all. Like, I never thought I would ever hear from anybody. But anyway, that was really cool. I went to the Rancho Bernardo Inn, which is a very nice place, which was actually where our friend Julia got married.
Mm-hmm.
Played about 22 songs for about 70 minutes and played some of my own stuff, played some, you know, traditional stuff, even played some video game songs, which, you know, I don't think anybody was really listening, so it really wasn't that hard. But
what'd you play?
I played the Diablo 1 Tristram town theme. I played Final Fantasy 8 Breezy, which is this nice little acoustic guitar piece.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't bust out something, you know, stupid like the Super Mario theme. You know, I try to pick stuff that fits in, but it's cool.
You could have done that Mario 2 Gypsy Jazz.
That's true. It's cool to know that video game music is definitely at that level where it fits in with other music and doesn't necessarily have to sound like so out of the norm that people would like, what the hell is he playing? Like, what is that weird music?
Right.
You know?
Right.
So that was really cool.
Cool. Nice.
And also I did have a meme of the week. That's kind of all of our memes of the week, but that video that we just saw was pretty cool. Jimmy Fallon versus John Krasinski doing a lip sync off on the Jimmy Fallon show.
It's excellent. It's very funny.
That was pretty good. YouTube. You should check that site out. They've got stuff on it. Upstream Color, Shane Carruthers, the guy from Primer who wrote and directed and acted in it. That is now digitally available. It was only in select theaters. It's still only in select theaters, but now you can watch it on like Amazon Video and Google and iTunes and stuff like that. So we should definitely watch that.
Yeah.
Because that shit looks tight. Two Fez-related notes. The second remix album of the FZ Side variety, FZ Side Z, is out. It just came out a couple days ago. Side F was the original one. They were like bookends for Fez coming out on PC. Speaking of Fez, on PC. So I love that game, and I was really, really like excited to play it again and see just how it works on Fez or on PC. I was actually really curious to see how they were going to handle the puzzles that involve the shaking of the controller.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, we can't really do that with a keyboard. So, but I can't even
I heard they were doing it with sound.
Okay. Then I really wanted to see how that worked.
Like static E, slowly, like in the background.
Like moving or something? Yeah. Like moving from right to left.
Fading
or left to
right. Into like actual sounds.
That's cool. Except I could not get it to work on any machine I tried. And
except once, right? It launched once while we were here?
Right. The very first time it launched and it worked, but all subsequent times I was getting an error. And I actually Skyped with Renaud, the lead programmer on Fez,
uh-huh.
and helped him out, and he actually was able to fix that error, which got me past it to the first screen, which then also bugged out and I couldn't get past. So I essentially gave up on playing it on PC and actually started a new game on my wife's account on the 360, where it works beautifully. So that really blows, and I hope they get those, because there's a whole list, like 13, 14 bugs that people are experiencing on PC. You know, there's a lot more configurations to deal with. People have different hardware. It's just, you know, it's like going from, you know, an Apple phone to the entire Android market or something, or probably worse than that, actually.
It's much worse than that.
So, that blows.
It's a good game, though.
It's a great game.
If it worked.
And then, also speaking of Fez, I watched this cool YouTube video called The Philosophy of Music Design in Games, which was a 45-minute talk given by Rich Vreeland, otherwise known as Disasterpiece, who made the music for Fez, where he showed off the part of the Fez music system. So it was basically like this dialogue box that you can go into Fezzer, which is the level editing tool that you use to make a level in Fez. In case anybody wasn't aware, like Fez is basically 3D modeled, the whole game. It's just that, you know, spoiler alert, it's shown in 2D chunks. So that's why it actually needs better graphics card power than you might think it needs, despite looking retro. But you can go into a scene and basically attach a song to a level, which brings up this dialogue box that has the name of the song and like all the different variations of that song that he may have written, and the ability to loop it a certain amount of time or delay it by a certain number of like minutes, only play it during a certain time of day. You know, when you pick up one of the little cubes in the bigger cubes, it plays a note and it is actually playing like a musical scale the more you get until you get the final cube. There's a setting in there to change the notes that it plays in every scene so that it works over any song that might be attached to it, rather than being a static scale over differently keyed songs, you know? So basically, like, you know, it's not like a simple write a bunch of music and throw it into a game. Like, they spent a lot of time making a whole custom system to put music into this game, which Rich said was because Phil Fish is one of the rare developers who, you know, thinks that audio is like maybe as important as the other parts of the game. So I really appreciate that. It was an interesting talk to just kind of get some of the behind the scenes on how that works. It just makes me love Disasterpiece more. So I went and like bought and downloaded like all the other albums that I didn't have from him, which should be surprising because you'd think I'd have them all by now. But he actually makes a lot of music. He's got like 30 albums out. It's insane. And then one final note and I'll stop. On iOS, I finally checked out this thing called AudioBus, which is basically like the missing connection between audio apps. So like on a normal computer, you know, you might open up Logic and you have the ability to record stuff, put plugins on it and effects, and actually sequence everything. Well, on iOS, you know, they're all one app at a time. So you might have something that makes noise, you might have something that affects noise, and you might have something that actually sequences, records it. But you can't run them all at the same time. Well, with AudioBus, you now can. And so you run AudioBus, which brings up like a screen, and it's got a bunch of squares that are connected, and you tap on one, and then you open up the noise-making app like Bebot, which is a cool synth. And then you go back into AudioBus, and you choose like the effects app. And then you go back into AudioBus, and you choose like GarageBand. And then in any one of those apps, a bar on the side will appear, and you can say like, if I'm in...
Really?
Bebot, I can go to the sidebar and go down to where GarageBand is loaded and hit record where I've set up a track in GarageBand to take that audio in and start playing.
Do those apps have to specifically support? Yeah,
they have to support it.
Okay.
And that's the really only issue with it right now is that not every app I want has support in it. Like right. Nano Studio, which is my favorite like non-Logic sequencer, although the dev has said that he's eventually going to put it in a few weeks. But just... I mean, It's a really cool. It's a really cool piece of tech. It's really well implemented. It works basically flawlessly. The only issue is that not every app supports it, which hopefully they will, because I think it's well done and everybody should. But it's just, you know, it's been out for maybe a few months. Mm-hmm. There's a competing technology called Jack, which is actually a port from something that came from, I think, Linux, but is also on Windows and Mac. I haven't tried that, so I don't know whether it's better or not. But AudioBus is definitely the flagship, flashy, looks really nice, well-designed version. And it's really sweet. I talked to Dave Vera about it, and he did not know and was equally jazzed. So
that sounds pretty brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sweet. It's kind of amazing that it does what it does. You know, I feel like it's poking holes in what iOS wants you to do, because it's like against their whole philosophy, but it works. So
yeah, I mean, as long as I was going to be astonished if they didn't have to specifically support it and it
yeah,
did
yeah,
all
yeah.
that.
I was right. prepped. But I was getting prepped to
I was
go
like,
crazy.
Oh, shit. That's nuts.
Yeah. Right.
Cool.
So that's really sweet.
So some stuff. I want to recommend. Want to recommend a Washington Post feature story, which is almost like a tiny novella. It's really good. So it's called The Prophets of Oak Ridge. It's about, you may have heard of this happening. It was about a year ago. There were three peace activists who broke into the Y-12 U.S. security, this like ultra secure U.S. facility where we store like 80% of our enriched uranium. It's where we do uranium or enrichment, you know, whatever they're called, like enrichment cascades or, you know, whatever it is, to produce weapons grade nuclear fissible nuclear bombs, basically. So it's super secure, you know, multi-billion dollar facility.
Or is it?
Right. And it's in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. It's where the Manhattan Project took place. And anyway, these three people, it was a Catholic nun, a house painter, and someone they refer to as a drifter, broke in.
Yeah.
Like, penetrated multiple layers of security, did not get inside any buildings, but got past, like, 400 yards of, you know, brightly lit, floodlit, you know, areas, security fencing, you know, multiple series of security fencing just with basic bolt cutters and stuff. And got through and you know, essentially vandalized the property as a protest against nuclear weapons. It's I just want to recommend it both because the story is interesting, but also because the writing is so good. It's really long. It's probably, I don't know, it'd be like a little, it's a major like magazine feature article, right? Yeah. It's probably 20,000 words or something. No, it's probably like, I don't know. 8,000 words, 10,000 words. I'm not sure. Anyway, it's excellent. The writing is amazing. The characters, each of those three people are very interesting in their own right. There's a whole sideline about the security guard who they essentially made a scapegoat so that there would be someone to blame. They fucking ruined this guy's life so that nobody higher up through the military chain of command has essentially received any level of punishment. Congress has held a few hearings about it, and you know, it's interesting. Gosh. And so anyway, these three people are going on trial, and that's why this article was written now a year later, is they're finally going on trial. Just excellently written, very fascinating story. And it reads kind of like a little, the guy wrote it because it's a feature article, not just a pure news story. It's written like a little spy thriller. It's kind of like reading a little mini Jason Bourne novel or something.
Yeah, I saw the headline and was like, whoa.
Yeah,
I got to read that. That sounds awesome.
Sounds good.
On that
topic, did you see the other headline that at some nuclear missile launch facility, like 18 people, like the majority of people working there, were found to be incompetent and all got fired recently?
No.
It was an Air Force nuclear missile base.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wait. That's a good segue. The Air Force is a segue.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Air Force.
What the fuck? So the Air Force's, the person in the Air Force who is tasked specifically with preventing, or is it preventing or prosecuting or...
Well...
Whatever.
All the above, probably.
Yeah.
The like anti-sexual assault guy in the Air Force, like the person who's tasked with, I think, preventing sexual assault and, you know, whatever, educate, was recently arrested for sexual assault just like last week or something like that.
Yeah, that was one of those ridiculous,
pretty astonishing.
Can't believe it's not an Onion headlines.
I'm sure it's probably in Reddit, the subreddit, not the Onion, which is just for articles that are unbelievable. Did you actually read like what he was actually arrested for?
Yeah, I mean,
sexual assault is kind of
groping.
He was groping, yeah.
Like full on, like not just one accidental like
honk honk.
Where he just went up and did it.
It was like
a
definitive
squish.
Groping, not brushed up against. I think accusatory.
I think he was drinking. It might have been like at a bar or a public place to somebody random. I don't think it was necessarily at the workplace. That's what I recall. I just skimmed it.
Speaking of Onion headlines,
did you hear that the Onion Twitter was hacked?
That real or was that a...
Is that even possible, really?
The Onion's Twitter was hacked by like a Syrian... some Syrian group, and they posted these fake Onion headlines that looked exactly like real Onion headlines.
Mm-hmm. They should hire them.
One of which was something like, UN chief criticizes Syria for getting in the way of Israel's nuclear missiles or something like that. Sorry, that was terrible.
Yeah. That doesn't sound
I
like
gotcha.
The
so, like...
That
obviously
rejected
like
in the room.
Politically motivated, but still like in the style of
It was actually kind of a funny headline that could be an Onion.
Could
one,
theoretically
is,
have been.
So people were confused for a little bit because they weren't linking to directly to real articles.
They should steal that like in 6 months when everybody forgets.
So there was an Onion headline today, which I really loved, which was everyone who started watching Mad Money in 2005, now billionaires. I love that idea.
Yeah.
That fucker, Jim Cramer. So amazing.
I hate that guy.
Yeah. That was good. I'm totally on... there's a new Fits in the Tantrum album, which is called More Than Just a Dream. The lead singer... So this is like a kind of neo-soul,
Are dreams more or less than feelings? That's what I want to know.
Less than a feeling.
All right.
I believe that's how that song goes. Fits in the Tantrum, they have a really great song called Money Grabber.
Yes.
I heard like 10 seconds of that song and I bought the album. You were actually there when I bought the album. Remember, you were at my house.
Oh, you just like buy it on iTunes or something?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And I wasn't all the way through watching the video and I bought the song. Anyway.
I vaguely remember that, yeah.
They have a new album out, which is very different. So that album is like neo-soul is probably the best way to describe it. It's like lots of horns, no guitar. He specifically wanted to have a band with no guitar. So it's bass guitar, but no like rhythm guitar or anything. Their new album, this is a switch
from... All guitar, nothing else.
Switch from an indie label to a major label, although they recorded the album before they got picked up on the major label. And it's a pretty different sounding. It's a lot more modern sounding, a lot less... of the kind of groovy, soulful, you know, different sound, but still interesting. I haven't listened to everything. Just heard the lead single and a couple other songs. That one, the lead single is called Out of My League. Link to it in the show notes. It's good. It's interesting. I'll link to that and some of the older stuff. And then there's this game coming out called Framed. I sent you guys... a link to a video about it, a news story about it. And this is a... I'm totally on the hype wagon for this game.
Choo-choo.
It's... That would be the hype train.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're on that next, though. It's coming.
Yeah, right.
You jump from the wagon to the train.
Yeah. This game looks interesting. You know, we've talked a lot about kind of interactive storytelling. This is a game where what you control as the player is the context in which the game action takes place. You don't control a character at all, and it's told through story panels. So it's called Framed. It's about a man who's been framed for a crime. But that also is relative to the storytelling device, which is comic panels, frames in a comic book, right? And basically on each screen, you are presented with a group of panels showing the context where the action is going to play out. and your character is going to come into the panel at the top left and make his way down the page, and you rearrange the panels into different orders to get different things to happen. So if there's a panel with a bad guy in it and you don't do anything, then your guy will run in and get punched by the bad guy. But if you rearrange the panel so that your character comes in through the other doorway, he'll sneak up behind the bad guy. Or if you put in a weapon in a panel with a weapon in it between where the guy is going to start and where the bad guy is, then he'll have a weapon when he encounters the bad guy.
That sounds
so
awesome.
So you manipulate the context and the order in which events happen.
Is that happening in real time, or you can take your time to do that?
It's not in real time.
Okay.
I don't believe so. I don't
so
actually.
It's more
know.
Strategy than action-y Twitch.
Yeah, it's like evaluate everything that's on here and see, like, you know, if I come in this side, then I'm going to come in through a door and leave through this ladder. Whereas if I reorder things, then maybe I'll come down the ladder instead of climbing up it. And yeah,
that's
fascinating.
Really, really cool.
Really interesting. Yeah. So
the best panel-based game since Comic Zone.
I'm psyched about it.
I said it.
This is one of those ideas that sounds so cool and crazy that I'm extraordinarily skeptical of it. Like, it sounds so weird that I don't see how it could actually translate into fun gameplay. Like, I'm just too skeptical. Hmm. You know what? So we'll wait and see.
Yeah,
on that one.
I will link
I'm
the
really
story.
Intrigued by cool ideas.
Did he
like
actually
that.
Have any gameplay video or just
they
screenshots?
Have what they released was a proof of concept video showing that concept
idea.
And that idea.
Okay. All right.
So it's really just one group of those frames, and then one sort of iteration of that idea, like trying it one way, flipping some things around so that it happens a different way. But the interview in this article with those people was saying, like, this game is incredibly complex to figure out, because if you can literally put any of these panels in any order, then we have to do every iteration and sort of tree map every possible iteration and figure out what happens every time and animate all of that. And it's like, well, really difficult to
do. I mean, that sounds like the same kind of issue that like the Scribblenauts devs had. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we're gonna make a dictionary of thousands of words, so we have to draw these things and think about how they're all gonna interact.
Yeah,
so
nuts. But sounds really cool.
Is
I love
that Kickstarter?
No, it's just I mean,
just coming.
Yeah,
okay,
just coming. Just saw like an interview. Did I have anything else? I think that's it. Oh, BioShock. I'm like an hour from the end, I think. I really, unless there's like a crazy major twist that leads me down another 5 hours of gameplay, I'm pretty sure that I'm right by the end. So I'm excited to find out what everybody's talking about, because I sort of feel like I slogged through this game. It's weird. Like I mentioned before, I'm just, part of me really, really loves it, and part of me really, really does not love it at all. You know?
It's
the fun parts are not the parts where I'm playing.
Yeah, I mean, lots of people were like, if this were done in a different type of game style, not an FPS, it would be better. And it's possible that it might have been. But I don't know. I enjoyed the FPS part of it. I thought it was, I mean, yeah.
It's really, really solid FPS.
Yeah, it's a
totally
really
solid,
well done
totally commendable.
Shooter. It's fun. Yeah. You know, the fact that you're best basically escorting someone, but it doesn't feel like an escort mission ever. That's cool.
You're not really escorting her.
Right, you're not.
She's a companion.
Right, but I mean, you know, initially you might think, oh, I have this person along with me. But and they even make a point to say that, you know,
you do not have to consider her in
she
combat.
She is an equal, you know.
She will take care of herself.
So it's nice that they addressed that and did something different. But
the thing that's a little weird about that is, yeah, you don't have to protect her, but she also doesn't really... I mean, she takes care of herself basically by hiding the whole time. Like, she's not like an equal participant in those sequences.
She's a healing class.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, she's like a support class.
She's a support class, which is, you know.
An NPC support.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Interesting. Occasionally, I find myself in, you know, a big set piece arena, and I'm like, oh, this will be fun. And it's kind of cool and fun. And lots of other times, I'm like, this is really boring, that this is the only way I can interact with this space.
Yeah.
Because I think that they are so good with that world building stuff. And they're so fascinating. They're really, really deep thinkers as far as that goes. And
And yet they also like want to make 40 money.
40 fucking weapons. Like, I mean, so we were talking about the difference between Tomb Raider, which you may be about to talk about, and this. And one of the key differences is Tomb Raiders, you have 4 weapons. And then in Bioshock, you have like, I don't know, you have like 8 major weapons and then double that number for a gameplay reason. So there are like 16 to 20 different weapons, half of which are basically the same as the other half, just like with these very minor modifications. And it's like total overkill and ridiculous, and they feel the same. And I don't know, it's annoying.
If it were an adventure game, I would have been more excited.
Well,
but I'm still going to play it, but maybe not until I get a new motherboard.
It's totally worth playing. I mean, it's a really good game. I definitely don't think that it's a bad game.
Yeah, you should just borrow it and play it on 360 when he's done.
I have it on Steam. I'll play it on Steam. It's the 5.1 doesn't work, which might not work until I get a new motherboard, which I wasn't planning on doing, so I might not play it for a year.
I think it'd be interesting for us to do a spoiler cast on it once we get there.
I think there's a lot to potentially talk about on that game. It's deeper than most games.
All right, yeah. Maybe I'll play it with headphones.
Yeah. Fuck your need to have 5.1 audio. Just play the damn game. It's worth it. So I can talk about Tomb Raider, or you can talk about games that you played.
Talking about stuff, dude. You guys had a lot of stuff. I didn't get to my stuff.
Oh, do your stuff. Yeah.
Oh yeah, do your stuff first.
Sorry, I sort of started talking about games.
Yeah. We're all over the map. We're crazy.
I mean, you talked about music. All your disaster piece and stuff reminded me that Jim Guthrie put an album out. It's his first album in
10 years.
Like 10 years or something. It's on Bandcamp. You can listen to it.
Yeah, he's good. I like his stuff.
I listened to a little bit. It's just like acoustic guitar singing stuff.
His solo stuff is weirder than his like 4 things stuff.
Who's Jim Guthrie?
Indie Game the Movie composer. But his solo stuff tends to be a little more.
And what else?
He did some Sound Shapes soundtrack. He did the soundtrack to Swords and Sorcery.
Swords and Sorcery is his big thing.
Sorcery.
He's another one of those guys in the making music for cool games and movies that are out recently.
I like the music he's been doing for things better than the little I heard of his album so far. Yeah. But it's worth listening. on the music topic, I've been like trying to find new good music, but not having success yet. Like I heard that one phenomenal Rodrigo y Gabriela song recently again and was like, God damn, this song is so fucking good.
You mean Diablo Rojo?
Maybe. I don't know. The one I don't think so.
Ching 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 ching. You know the one with the guitars, right? That one?
It's kind of flamenco style.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
The one where they play guitar, one plays rhythm, one plays lead. That's a good one.
So I put that shit into Pandora, and it has not led me to like lots more amazing.
Yeah, because they're insanely good.
Yeah, because they're like the best.
Yeah,
it gets.
Don't listen to anybody else.
They came on while I was over at my parents' house, just on like random Pandora mix. They just like zoomed in, and it was their cover of Orion. And my mom was like, "Wow, what's this song? This is really great. You just mentioned it." And I'm like, "This is Rodrigo y Gabriela's cover of Orion by Metallica, which I happen to know exactly what song this is."
They also do an insanely good job on covering Stairway to Heaven. Mm. Like, that song you probably think has been done to death, but it's totally worth listening to.
And then not nearly as good, but I just had this you know, the guilty
you know clip. Real quick. They break into Take 5 in the middle of Orion. Do you remember that?
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I need to listen to that.
That's kind of crazy. Go ahead.
That sounds rad. Anyway, just I'm not having luck with Pandora. I have not watched a ton of movies. I'll go through a couple movies real fast.
Kevin, thanks you.
Not enough. I watched Silver Linings Playbook, finally.
Yep.
I was looking forward to this for a long time. I thought I was going to love it. But it was okay. I liked it. Maybe 4 stars.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's good. It's not phenomenal. It's too much Bradley Cooper. Honestly, I wanted more Jennifer Lawrence, more of her mental state and stuff. Like, I think he did a good job. It was all right.
I think it was like one of my favorite things he's been in. But then I haven't seen a lot of his stuff.
Yeah.
It's like that in The Hangover, basically. The Hangover,
yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of things he's been
in. So what has he been in that's been better? Anything?
No, it is the best thing he's been in, but yeah. He's usually okay in most things, and he was good in this.
Yeah.
You know?
I haven't seen a ton of them, but I thought it was a really well-portrayed, well-directed filmic version of, a panic attack. I think that it's pretty true to life to what those are like for the people who are experiencing them. Like, that kind of overwhelming and building, continuously building sense of anxiety and panic. Like, I thought that was really, really well depicted.
Yeah, they did a good job. It's pretty tense to watch at times. Yeah. It's pretty, uncomfortable intentionally, you know.
Yeah.
They definitely depict manic depression pretty well, but manic depression is so different for different people that it's, you know, it's not representative for everyone. He's still, you know, very specific personality. Mm-hmm. She is too. It was good. But then again, it was just a rom-com or whatever.
Yep.
What The Descendants, I saw.
Scorsese, right?
Was it?
No.
No?
No, it was the Sideways guy.
I don't think so.
Guy who directed Sideways.
That sounds right.
Alexander Payne?
Yeah.
The Descendants? Oh, wait, is this the George Clooney one?
Yes.
The Hawaiian one? Oh, yes. Right, yeah.
George Clooney on Hawaii.
Yeah, what'd you think of it? Because I actually saw that.
I liked it. 4 stars. I don't know. It's one of those dramas where it's just like kind of emotional, kind of slow pace, just people dealing with feelings. It's good.
Yep.
Life.
Yep. And then
is it funny like Sideways?
No.
Nah.
No.
I think there's.
Yeah, I think I give it like 3.5 stars. I didn't like it as much as I'd hoped I would.
Uh-huh. Mm. Yeah, that's appropriate.
Mm.
I don't give halves though.
You should just have given it.
I'm pretty sure you've given a half.
6 stars, no? Or something.
Yeah, Netflix doesn't let me give halves. So.
Well, but you can use whatever you want to use, and I use halves.
No, I forced myself into the Netflix 3.83. Scale recently.
Okay.
If I were to come up with my own scale, it would be like 1 to 100, like Metacritic or whatever. But but because I watch things through Netflix, I'm forced to give them between 1 and 5 stars. I make myself give everything that I watch through Netflix between 1 and 5 stars.
Yeah.
I have to either give it a 3 or a 4 or not click anything, but I chose to force myself to click something always. So
All right. I
click a 4 on that one. And I started to watch The Town, but fell asleep. And then when I was supposed to watch it, I ended up just watching a shit ton of YouTubes. So
okay.
I caught up on Auto-Tune the News. I watched like every Auto-Tune the News that Shmo Yoho has posted for like the last 2 years.
That's a lot of Auto-Tune the News.
Oh my God, so much Auto-Tune the News. It's really good. Those guys are talented and they're still putting up a bunch of funny shit.
The Town is good though. You should watch that.
Yeah, yeah. I watched the first 10 minutes. The first 10 minutes are pretty
so
good.
So good, put him to sleep.
Yeah. That's my shit. Games?
Yeah.
Yeah. I played some Punch Quest.
Yeah? What'd you think?
It's all right. It's pretty good. It's an infinite runner.
Yep.
I mean,
it's one of the better ones.
It's better. It's deeper than I thought for playing 60 seconds. As soon as you play about 5 minutes, then you're like, oh, I have to block and I have to, you know.
Yep.
You get the block and the uppercut, and you get the uppercut higher, and you realize get
the ground pound.
You realize you can completely stop if you want to, and you can, you know, it's deeper than.
And you don't die in one hit, so.
And there are a lot of item interactions as well.
There's a lot of stuff.
It's got a good sense of humor. The devs are, you know, very lighthearted.
A crazy loadout.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, they're good guys.
I feel that way about Ridiculous Fishing. I played it a lot more, and I have, quote, beaten it.
Did you bring it?
I haven't gotten every fish.
I still haven't. Nobody's given me a device.
I don't carry my iPhone at all.
You got to bring it.
Okay, yeah. Anyway, it's deeper than I thought it was. 4 stars. It's gone from 3 to 4 stars.
Yeah, actionbutton.net did one of those, like, 10-page, 4 out of 4-star reviews for it, where he just, like, opines... waxes poetic about the chainsaw lure for like paragraphs, you know, like
I love that guy.
It's utterly brilliant according to Tim Rogers et al.
Yeah, It's not.
He's kind of a mechanic nut like you.
Yeah, that's true.
He loves like well crafted mechanics.
I don't always agree with him, but I like him a lot.
Yeah, he's cool. Exhausting. That's
what
the problem.
What else did you play?
Does it?
What'd you play?
Yeah, I played. I finally got. I'm deep into Tomb Raider. I'm like probably 50-60% in now.
Nice.
So it's really good. I enjoy it. I heard a review of it. Someone said that it was the best Uncharted game ever.
It is the best Uncharted,
and I haven't played a lot of Uncharted, but from what I've played, I think that's probably true.
Did I tell you guys I played the Vita Uncharted?
No.
I played some of the Vita Uncharted on the plane or whatever.
Yeah,
and it's like the other Uncharteds. Like I give it a 7 or 8, just like all the other Uncharted, in sense of it's kind of a slightly less good Tomb Raider. Like it's kind of annoying. You're too much on rails. You can't, like, all the jumps are like impossible to miss, mm-hmm. except when you totally walk off a cliff when you shouldn't have.
Uh-huh.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's not as good as Tomb Raider for the climbing and jumping. The combat's kind of bad though. So that's why it gets like, critic reviews of 7s or whatever.
Yeah.
It's kind of, the shooting is pretty bad, at least at the beginning of the game. I only gave it an hour or so, or two. But the acting and the dialogue and all those scenes and shit are really impressive, just like the console ones, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Although the story's not that interesting at the beginning. Anyway.
Yeah, pretty much everything you guys talked about when you talked about it, I think in general I agree with. So the graphics are really good. It's, you know, that moment when you get past the intro and you finally get your first glimpse of the island and the wreckage, that's pretty awesome.
Yep.
The radio tower, holy Jesus.
Ziplining
is cool. Yeah, I mean,
I just think being in a cave is the coolest part of that game.
Ducking down and that shit being, like, you having, like, 2 feet of clearance and
having the water up to your chin and like holding a torch.
It's so goddamn cinematic.
Putting your hand on the ceiling.
Yeah.
Like, I almost feel like it's, you know, it's one of those games that ever since we had the technology available to make, you know, like an actual good cinematic adventure, you know, that's like a movie that you're playing, you mm-hmm. know, this is like one of the pinnacles of that ideal it feels cinematic like a movie. And yet you're actually controlling it and the gameplay is fun and it doesn't feel, you know, like the whole thing is a big QTE or anything like that. And the QTEs that are in it,
I think they're good.
Are fine. Yeah. I actually don't have any problem with them. I remember Chaz, you saying that you really were impressed by the writing, and I think the writing is okay.
Did I say
that? Yeah, you mentioned it multiple times. Like, why isn't the writer getting more of a due? Why aren't we talking about Pratchett, I forget what her name is, that wrote for the game. You injected several times that you were why aren't more people talking about the writing?
Lara herself is an interesting character, and her development is interesting, but the overarching story is not very good, and none of the other characters really stand out as people or interesting.
Yeah, I don't care about any of the other characters. Like, I feel no emotion toward, like, if, you know, spoiler alert, if someone maybe doesn't make it off the island, I kind of feel nothing. Like, they didn't do anything to build the relationship between almost anybody except maybe you and Sam and Roth. But I don't know. I was going into it thinking that I was going to be really invested, but it's the gameplay that I care about and the story I could kind of give or take.
Yeah, so if I said that, which I don't really recall saying, but I don't recall not saying it, I've changed my opinion since then. I think the writing is fine, but I think it's pretty typical, you know, maybe a little bit better than Uncharted. I don't really know. Typically, like, maybe above average for a video game, which means kind of below average if it were a novel or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I think it's definitely one of those games, like some movies or whatever, where they design the game and the set pieces and such before they write the plot.
Right.
So it's like, you know.
Or they have the basic rough outlines, sketches for the
An island exists. She is going to traverse it and attempt to escape.
Right.
Let's write some story around.
There are enemies.
This. Let's give you some scaffolding reason to climb that tower over there, or to randomly go over here and over there,
sort of
and
thing.
Yeah. So that's still kind of weak, but obviously I know is not the focus. So.
Basically, an action movie.
Right. It is. It's like a summer blockbuster, but it's awesome. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous roller coaster of a ride. So for what it aims to be, it does very well. And the fact that I'm not done with it, based on where the story and the action has gone, is like, oh my god, there's more. Like, it's not done yet. I'm only halfway through the game. Are you kidding me?
Are you doing any of the collectibles?
I'm not going out of my way. No, I've barely used the map. I basically just go where they tell me to go.
Yeah, and I did the same thing.
I've done a couple tombs, and I feel like I probably won't go back and do
any
of those.
Doing the tombs is fun.
The tombs are cool.
Yeah.
But I don't think once I beat it, I will go back and do ones that I missed. I don't know.
I would.
You should do every
You should do
tomb.
All the tombs. Because the tombs are a really fun gameplay element.
They're cool.
And they're just fun to do. So
and they're unique environments.
Doing. Yeah.
Mm. You won't see every environment unless you go to every tomb. Mm.
Yeah.
They're cool.
I think it's worth doing the tombs. I did not do any of the other collectibles unless I just happened across a thing. So.
But I agree with what Josh said, that when you find an artifact and the fact that there's actually, like, it's more than just get item. You actually get the full 3D rendering, and you actually get a bonus information if you actually, like, look at it and spin it around. Like, that kind of attention to detail is pretty neat. I appreciated that.
And the whole concept of the island, that kind of like the Lost Island, where all these cultures have, like, crashed there throughout history.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's
actually pretty cool.
That's kind of like the reason you're finding these artifacts from different cultures.
Yeah.
Right.
That's pretty neat. I like that concept.
Yeah. Comparing it to Lost, they obviously were writing it in a post-Lost world, you can tell.
I think I recall what I might have been saying about the writing was how, particularly at the beginning, I thought it was strong, and then I thought
it
faltered how the scenes when... As she is crashing on the island, and then as she's, you know, kind of in this like weakened state, the first time you have to kill somebody, and then how that's totally let down by immediately then killing 20 other dudes and that stuff, that kind of back and forth.
But I was ready for that, so it wasn't as much of a letdown.
Yeah. Previous to the murdering hundreds of dudes.
Yeah. Like, I think it's strong at the beginning.
I've never really held shot someone, but now I have four items and can kill people from across the screen.
That is only like the first hour or two.
Yeah.
But that's a very affecting... I think that's an excellent moment, actually. It's an excellent video game moment.
Yeah.
All the way up until that point.
Yeah. And then I just wanted that to continue.
Immediately right then.
Yeah.
Like, even if they had just like let her have that moment and then go on for another 10 minutes and then have a firefight or something like that.
Well,
just
and
the fact that it's right then.
And,
so bad.
And I mean, like, it could have been if they would have given the, like, made it more like a Deus Ex game where there was the option to stealth your way through, you know, like, that would have been nice. But obviously they want you to guns blaze the whole game, which is fine, but it just, it's only, it
there
feels
are some nice stealth
one-dimensional
sections. You can do some stealthy stuff. And there's one in particular that's like explicitly a stealth section.
But it's like you don't have any items to use besides weapons. So there's no like...
There's no non-lethal option.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Well, and there's no like, you know, I don't know, like an item that would allow you to be more stealthy.
Except, bow.
Well,
there's
but it's still a weapon though.
There's several stealth weapons. And the bow you can use as a distraction tool also.
True. I don't know. It just, I don't know. Maybe it's just that.
It's not a stealth game at all.
And I think if they made another one, they should really amp that up because I think that would make it like
stealth
even
melee.
Better.
I loved its ratio. As far as gameplay mechanics, I think its ratio of stealth to shooting, to climbing, to exploring, to finding collectibles, to action sequences, to like quick time events, to like story. I thought all the ratios were like great. I didn't think there was an imbalance anywhere. I liked the small amount of stealth because I don't think heavy stealth is as easy to pull off.
It is much harder to do, which is probably why they didn't go that way, but also it would feel thematically more in line with her whole I have never killed a dude, but now that's all I'm going to do for the rest of the game, yeah. Which is, you know, is kind of some cognitive dissonance that, yes, you have to get over because it's a game. But they could have made it more like, well, shooting that guy was fucking traumatic, so I'm going to try to not shoot people. No, no, we're not going to go there. We're going to make you shoot everybody.
Made absolutely. It more of a ramp up.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It was kind of like right off a cliff into Murder City.
Murder Town.
Which
population,
yeah. But still, it's such a good game that you look past that, but that would be a way to make it better if they went back and tried it again.
Yeah, she had no moral qualms, but also yeah. They were pretty brutal to her.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, the death animations are brutal. They're not as brutal as I thought they would be, and I think I really feel it's mainly that you're playing a female character. If it was a dude, it wouldn't feel as brutal.
The death animations are not that brutal, except for a few specific ones, which are horrific.
Exactly.
Like
you falling have to, like in the river get and the getting, bed. Yeah, the
in
river
the river,
death scene.
Or like ugh. If you hit a tree, there are certain sections where you can like run into a tree, and those are like way over the top and unnecessary and like pornographic in the like close up and
that river sequence where that has that horrible death animation. Of course, that's like one of the few spots where I died like 15 times. So I had to see that animation over and over again. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Oh man.
Yeah. And you know, you complained, not complained, but you mentioned that there were a few shooty parts that were annoying because if you die, you have to do them all over again. That happened once or twice. And it was kind of frustrating, but definitely not, like, you know, deal-breaking.
Definitely not game-breaking
at all. The combat is fun enough to where you kind of like, eh, all right, I got to do it again. But And the checkpoint system is good. You know, they don't really, like, punish you that much for dying. So it's good.
I think I played on hard, and I never died more than, like, 3 times in a row or something.
But, oh, God, I'm playing on normal, and I've died probably 2 or 3 dozen times easily.
But, in a row. I did do find more collectibles and upgraded like every weapon as soon as possible. Pretty much by the end, I had everything 100%ed and a ton of extra money. And Charles, I don't think upgraded any weapon fully.
No, I upgraded a couple fully.
Okay,
and I had like 2 upgraded fully and 2 upgraded maybe 70 or 80%.
Anyway.
So all right, that's all
Tomb
I
Raider.
Played.
Yep. Tomb Raider. I also played Knife That Guy. It's a 99-cent Android game.
You mean hashtag?
I think it's actually pretty good. I think it's
not bad.
I think it's kind of
a fun little diversion.
It's fun and it's kind of funny.
It's Snake with a moving pellet is what it is in its mechanic.
It's a little deeper, I think.
Yes, but, Knife but That Guy is a little deeper than that, I guess.
Hey, it's got 3 words in the title. Snake only has 1 word.
Right.
That is 3 times as deep.
Speaking of which, did you see the animated GIF of the guy beating Snake?
Yeah, I sent it to you.
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So then you saw it.
I did, yes.
Did you also see it, Josh?
Okay. Yeah, I
saw all right, sorry.
Yeah.
That was good. Well, that thing you sent me.
There's multiple that guys, you know.
Right, there's but there's also that guys that you guys. Don't knife.
Yeah, there's also that guy.
Don't knife those guys.
Yeah. Also, Rimmed Capsule came out.
Yes.
For PlayStation Mobile, which means some weird phones and the Vita.
Such an odd choice when you think about it. Kind of. Exclusively on that right now? Who does that?
At least for now. I mean, I think indie
developers... Oh, is it like the Xperia? If you get like if you have a Sony Xperia, then you can play that game on the...
Yeah, it's not in the regular Vita market. It's in the mobile market, which means it's like a Sony phone game
certain
too.
Phones
yeah
that's why it's coming to Android because those are Android based
and
that's why it's exclusive to Vita
for a little while
but that's good because that means it's like ready to be ported like there's probably. No porting involved and it'll be probably. Right there awesome.
I mean so many games these days are just written in Unity or whatever
right
mm-hmm.
and whichever platform they choose to release on first it's inevitable that a few months later they get released on the rest.
Time so, exclusive.
Like Knife That Guy is Android first. It's probably going to come to iOS pretty soon. And that, whatever that...
Knife That Guy.
It's hilarious.
Hey, it's like you got to cut the rope.
And that cowboy game that you were showing me is Unity and it'll probably come to Android
Blade
soon.
Something or other. Slinger. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm glad we live in this day and age that we were... That's a reality because it didn't used to be that way. You know, you kind of chose your console... And you played whatever came out on the console, do or die, you know?
One other game that I didn't get to. Oh, well, we didn't talk about Rimmed Capsule. Rimmed Capsule.
Rimmed Capsule.
Charles played a bit. Tell us how good it is, Charles.
We mentioned it a few show episodes ago. This is the Tetris slash StarCraft clone. Yeah. It's basically StarCraft base building and attack and offense, RTS, minimized to work on a touchscreen, and your base blocks, the rooms that make up your star base are Tetris blocks.
Tetraminos.
Yeah. So I played it for 8 to 10 minutes at the beginning, long enough to realize that I'm going to spend tens, possibly hundreds of hours playing that game as soon as it comes out for Android, and got me pretty hyped on it. I knew I was excited about it when Josh sent me the video.
Oh, this was this is going to be your jam game.
Yeah, and okay. I was like, oh, yes, it is. And I just played it for 10 minutes. And I'm like, it totally is. And so, yeah, now I'm excited for it to come out for Android whenever that happens.
Nice.
It's really good. It's like a very minimal aesthetic, minimal UI, simplified. You know, your guys automatically do things. It's not like click a guy, tell him where to go. It's you have four dudes and they can be doing one of eight things and then you can just put them on. It's just like a simple
choose
UI
which
that
four
allows,
things you want to prioritize.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like it's energy good. In FTL. Like, yeah. Where do you put your four energy gaps?
It's nice. Yeah, yeah. It's cool. Nice. Very cool.
Nice.
Crappy music, though, from what I heard from 10 minutes. It was just like
really
short loop of the kind of.
Oh, that could be a deal breaker like Tokyo Jungle for you.
No, not a deal breaker at all because I listen to podcasts. It's only a deal breaker
if
like,
you have to listen to the sound effects.
It doesn't let you mute it and listen to something else. Yeah.
Okay. The other game that just came out like yesterday that I need to try is, well, it's just a demo. It's a Fuse demo. Have you heard of Fuse? It's a 4-player co-op shooter. The demo's on Xbox Live.
Uh-huh.
I think it's going to be a $60 game in a few weeks. It's going to come out. But the concept is I think there's like 4 characters. They're all unique classes or abilities a little bit. And the 4 of you have to work together to fucking co-op shooter.
Now, that's your jam.
That is my jam. So
yeah.
I was too lazy to play last night.
Is it objective-based?
YouTube, but I don't know shit about it, except there's a free demo. It's a 4-player co-op shooter. So I got to do it.
You guys heard about this game called Monaco?
I was just sitting here waiting to say that.
Also that
Monaco.
Looks good.
Yes, I think we should try that.
We should try it.
That game seems
like
all
4th?
Of our jams.
Is it out?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Cool. That's so, listeners, that's like a heist game. Each player is a member of
role.
A like Italian Job style heist team. There's a hacker guy and a cat burglar, whatever, right?
Lockpick.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is that it's sort of like half the game is trying to devise the best strategy for the heist, and then the other half is improvising when that goes wrong.
Uh-huh.
And when shit doesn't work out how you planned it and thinking on the fly.
Yeah.
It does look really... And it's got sort of like a kind of a even more retro Hotline Miami overhead-ish. Like, it looks really chaotic from the video I've seen.
Uh-huh.
And the interesting thing is you can only see your cone of vision. So the whole map is blacked out like fog of war except where your player's cone of vision and I guess your teammates.
Yeah.
So... That's the level of difficulty that I don't know whether that works well or not, but sounds interesting. I don't know.
Weird.
Yeah. I don't know. It looks really interesting. Everybody I've heard talk about it says it's awesome, but it also looks really crazy and manic and maybe too retro, but I don't know. I don't want to judge it without playing it.
I definitely want to try it. I haven't even seen any of the gameplay.
You should watch some
the
video
general
gameplay
internet,
of it. Yeah.
Internet discussion. The Penny Arcade on it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
All right. Those are games.
Cool.
Do we have a topic?
So I don't know if this is a good topic or not, but I thought about it when you brought up Kickstarter or when I brought up Kickstarter. There was an interesting hullabaloo online recently with Zach Braff and Kickstarter. So he went to Kickstarter to crowdfund for a sequel to Garden State.
Uh-huh.
And Ken Levine, not the Irrational BioShock games guy, but a different Ken Levine who's a writer... has a blog, and he wrote an opinion piece where he basically said that I would never give Zach Braff a dime on Kickstarter. He likes Zach Braff. He likes Garden State. he doesn't hate the man, but he thinks that Zach Braff is using Kickstarter in a way that it's not intended for.
Who is that guy?
Ken Levine. He's a writer. He's written for like Cheers and Frasier and stuff.
He's a TV writer.
He's a TV writer, yeah. All right. So he's been around the business for a while.
Did he have a problem with the Veronica Mars one?
He also had a problem with Veronica Mars. Yep. He thought it was obscene that they would use Kickstarter. Now, this is why he thinks this. And after reading some more opinion pieces, I don't necessarily agree with his statements. But I'm curious to see what you guys think in general. That, you know, he basically sees Kickstarter for, even though it's not in their charter, it's not specifically intended just for indie projects, people who can't, you know, get money any other way. It's not for the destitute solely. It's just for anybody who wants to crowdfund, which means Zach Braff can use it too, which means Penny Arcade can use it.
Sure.
But he thinks that, you know, this is basically a sign of Hollywood co-opting and exploiting something that has gotten popular, and that there's some kind of zero-sum game that if, you know, Kickstarter is flooded with Zach Braff's and Veronica Mars's, that they're going to take up all the money because they're the known quantities,
right,
and that money will not go to indie people who can't get this money. Like, he's like, Zach Braff, he can get in a room with people with money. He can pitch shit. You know, he doesn't need Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. Why is he using it for that platform? And somebody wrote and basically said, no, you're wrong. It's not a zero-sum game. You know, it's not like someone goes on Kickstarter, has $10, and they can only fund one project, and they see Zach Braff, and they're like, oh my God, I know who that is, and they give him your money, and then all the indie people never get seen. They say, no, that's not how it is. You can spend your money or not spend your money on Zach Braff, and he's not going to steal. So I don't know. What do you guys think in terms of what Kickstarter is for, and is Zach Braff like totally fucking shit up or what?
I just read literally the same argument played out about the new Penny Arcade Kickstarter.
There's another new one?
It's for downloadable content, their podcast.
Oh.
And what they did is they have a Kickstarter to fund downloadable content. They made their funding goal $10. So they put it out there basically saying, we are going to do this regardless, but it costs money to do things, so we would like to get some support, essentially the NPR model. We'd love to have your support, and here's a bunch of goals and stretch goals and some things that you'll get if you pledge at different levels. But basically, we're going to do the Penny Arcade podcast. And people are totally ripping the shit out of them, even for that, right? And it's a lot of the same things. It's like, you know, this money could have gone to other projects. Penny Arcade don't need money to make things. They have, you know, these guys are all millionaires. They should be funding it themselves. A lot of those same arguments. I don't know, Josh, do you think that it's a perversion of Kickstarter?
People whining about what other people do with their money, it's their choice, is like, it's just dumb. You know, like, you can disagree with someone's politics, but. You can't like disagree with how someone else chooses to spend their money. You know, this is like my argument about some games. It's like, if you think that game was overpriced, don't buy it. Mm-hmm. Don't complain that it's a game for $60 or whatever. Just don't buy it, or wait until it goes on sale for $20 if you think it's worth $20. Whatever it's worth is what you'll pay for it, you know? Like, just because a game is $60 and has $10 day one DLC, like, doesn't mean boycott it, like, fuck that company.
Right.
A bit like I would have played that game if it, you know, if it didn't have a $10 DLC.
Right. Or that's my justification for pirating
you know?
It.
You know what? Like, that game is worth $70 to some people.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're making their choice when they're setting the price point that, you know, if they set the game to be $200, it will be worth $200 to some people. It'll be a smaller subset of customers.
Yep.
And then there'll be more dicks like complaining, right? But or they could release it for $5 and potentially sell more. But everything is priced at a point where they think they will either maximize their total profit by reaching the largest number of customers while also getting the most money out of them, like on average or total, or they're priced with this model where you give however much you feel is worth and you just give it away for free and people can donate. Right. Like Bandcamp,
right? Yep. Or lots of times it's like, download this shit, or give me a dollar, or give me 10, or give me 50, or Humble Bundle, you know, give at least zero or at least 1 cent. I don't know what the minimum is.
Yeah.
1 cent or zero. But get all these fucking games. But if you give more than the average, like $8, then you get these more games. And if you give $35, then you also get this other thing and a t-shirt for $70 or whatever. You know, like, I love the model of pay whatever you want. I love the NPR model of mooch as long as you want. And then when you have money,
support when you can.
Like, support with as much as you can support. Yeah. You know? Like, every pricing model I do not have a problem with. And fuckers who say, like, fuck your pricing model, like, they're just, they're, I don't know, they're just whiners. I don't know if they want the product for free. If he's like, I really want to see a Garden State too, but right. I don't want to, like, pay for it 2 years before it's made and before I know if it's good or not, or if it's even going to get made. Mm-hmm. And maybe those people are going to be able to see it sooner than me as just a regular customer. Right. Or, like, I don't know what exactly what he's whining
about. So I think, let me read you this other part about his, from his article that I think is a more salient point than just this pricing thing that we've been talking about. This is what Hollywood does. It sees an opportunity for exploitation and takes it. The Sundance Film Festival is a prime example. At one time, it showcased modest little movies by unknown filmmakers. Kevin Smith made Clerks at Sundance. The result was Discover Talent. Now look at the festival. Every entry features major Hollywood stars. During the festival, they all descend upon Park City, along with Harvey Weinstein, reps from every major studio, and 1,000 CAA and William Morris agents. Any hint of the original purpose of the film festival has long since vanished. If Will Ferrell or Brad Pitt, just to name two random examples, are in an independent film, do they really need a film festival to get Harvey Weinstein to screen their film? The chubby nerd from New Jersey who maxed out his credit cards to make a film about a local convenience store couldn't. He needed a film festival. He needed an audience to appreciate his effort before he could be recognized. And now today's equivalent of a young Kevin Smith can't even get his movie into a festival, much less Harvey Weinstein's screening room. So I think his larger point is that this is more of a, you know, this is a bad seed that if Hollywood sees this as a market to capitalize on, it's going to push out the indies who need a way to get money for their project, and this is where they would go, whereas Zach Braff has options that Kevin Smith did not have for Clerks. So I don't know. What do you think about that?
He's right in the sense that, you know, hipsters are right about everything, right? You know, Comic-Con was cool when it was about the comics, man. Mm-hmm. Now it's just about
movies.
X-Files. Fuck, it was about X-Files like 10 years ago, right?
Yeah. X-Files comic.
I don't know. You know, anything that is about indie things or that is small and cool, if it's cool enough, it gets popular. When it gets popular, it's no longer cool and indie.
Right.
You know, it's a never-ending cycle. Like, if he wants a fucking funding site that's only for indie things, like, start a new one. If you want a convention that's for real indie films that are really low budget, start a new film festival, you know? Mm-hmm. It's an inevitable cycle of anything that's cool enough becomes popular and is no longer cool.
Yeah, and I think a point that he's also missing is why, despite Zach Braff's ability and contacts in Hollywood, would go to Kickstarter versus doing it any other way, is that
it's cool.
Well, and also just creative control. Like, he may be able to get in a room with people who have money that can fund stuff, but they're going to want to control it, and they're going to want to impose their opinion, whereas Kickstarter means, this is my show the whole way. It just means that I can't use the normal channels. And I could see that, you know, I could see that being a legitimate reason for using something like that. I can think anybody would want that. Lots of people in any industry who have signed to a major company have that complaint. And, you know, I mean, Zach Braff is, you know, yeah, he's popular and has money and is known, but that doesn't mean that he necessarily can make anything he wants at any time for any amount of money. you know, everybody has their limits. So, yeah, that's something he doesn't even... I mean, he has responded to some of that stuff, but, you know, it's the internet. That could go on forever. Who knows? So, yeah, I think he's probably fear-mongering a bit because he's from the old industry, and I don't know.
Did you hear that Trump is starting his own Kickstarter competitor?
Seriously?
Really?
Donald Trump.
Yeah. Yeah, Trump is backing some other...
Is it called Trump Starter?
It's for, like, funding startups of some kind. I forget what it's called. Yeah, Trump Starter. I don't know.
Trump, TrumpYouUp.com.
God, that guy's such a publicity... ridiculous, like, manager of publicity. So I've been flipping through a NeoGAF thread trying to find this particular post that I read in it about the Penny Arcade one, where somebody actually pulled out the terms of service entry from Kickstarter's, either Kickstarter's TOS or their fact page or something, where they explicitly state how they are not they don't intend their platform to be solely used for indie artists. It's for anyone. It's not just for getting the funding you need, but it's also a publicity mechanism. Like, Kickstarter explicitly state that as a way to kind of refute the scam argument that gets made a lot of times, where people say, like, they don't need this money, therefore this is a scam. You know, Kickstarter has an entry that, you know, so that got thrown out
by putting out the $10 goal. They're explicitly stating we don't need the money.
I mean, that one in particular is like, where's the outrage? They're basically saying, we're going to give you the show for free, mooch if you want. We want to get some publicity by doing this Kickstarter, and we want to get people excited about it, and we want to purely get some funding.
I mean,
because stuff costs money, but we're going to give it away for free if we only get $10.
Yeah, they're purely using the site as a PayPal donate button.
Yeah.
You know, like, why do people not get angry at PayPal? Maybe they do.
Oh, there's plenty of hate for PayPal for other reasons. Yeah.
You're right. There's plenty of hate for people putting a PayPal donate button on things, which is also nonsensical.
Yeah. Yeah, wasn't there a story about someone who used a PayPal to get money to give to a charity, and then PayPal, for some reason, thought there was some breach of their contract for that reason, and they had to give all the money back or something like that?
I do remember that story. I don't recall what it was.
Man, though. They got so much hate for that. That was ridiculous. Anyway.
That was the oatmeal, wasn't it? Wasn't it?
No, it was some other random person. I don't think it was the oatmeal. Although, what was the one oatmeal probably has a story about PayPal.
There was something where there was something to do with the oatmeal and getting the money that's, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think overall, it's really, really hard for someone to show potentially that money that went to a Kickstarter from a known quantity would have gone otherwise to some unknown indie band that, you know, wasn't famous and couldn't have gotten a record made any other way.
Yeah.
It's hard to show. Like, there's a reason why people give money to bands they know and are excited to, like, they know the band. They want to hear the next album from the band. Yes, that band is going to get more money. They are better known. Like, they are better able to make use of this tool. The tool is still available for the little indie band, and hopefully their first Kickstarter is successful enough that their next one is bigger, but it's just another tool to get publicity
It's like being angry at Hostess. Like, stop making, like, oatmeal pies because my soy crackers at Whole Foods would sell better if you weren't selling as many.
Well, they did stop making pies. They stopped making everything.
I don't know. You know what I mean?
It's the indies won.
Yeah.
It's like, it made me think, like, this argument is treating this whole thing as if this were a brick and mortar store where you went in and you had the choice between little unknown indie band or indie movie maker on the right side and Zach Braff on the left. Like, as if his mass within the store is preventing another indie movie maker's mass from existing.
Right.
Like, that's not how it works on the internet. Like, Zach Braff being on Kickstarter does not take up room that another movie maker would take up. Like, you know, there's infinite room.
It might be the opposite. Like we said before about the flower shop row in New York or whatever. Mm-hmm. What was that? Radiolab?
Yeah, as Planet Money.
Yeah. Is there a word for that concept?
I don't recall what it is, but the idea is that the somewhat counterintuitive idea that lots of competitors for a similar product in the same place would seem to be a bad thing, but it's actually good, and everyone can charge higher prices.
Yeah, they encourage each other's business.
Yeah,
So maybe
the Diamond District or the Fashion District,
because of Zach Braff, maybe even more people will come to Kickstarter,
right?
Yeah,
looking for film projects for indies and or music or whatever.
Yeah,
yeah, it's an interesting discussion to have, but basically, people should be able to use it as long as it goes with the Kickstarter terms of service. Like, it's kind of hard to be mad about it.
Yeah.
Like, the part that I think it's
He's worried about the spirit. He thinks the spirit of Kickstarter is something that I think it is not necessarily. Well,
you know, maybe you could have made that argument when Kickstarter originally launched and they didn't have it.
It's not IndieStarter.
When they had it defined. But they explicitly say that that's not the case. Like, they have a clause in their, either in their, like I said, there's something in their TOS. I'll link to it in the show notes. But they have a thing on their FAQ. Like, that's not what it's for. I mean, yeah, we want to fund indies. We want to fund anyone through our platform. And there are Kickstarter competitors that are explicitly for indie stuff. There's Indiegogo and several others, right? So
I wonder if this means we'll be seeing, like, Ford or Chevy someday in the future crowdsourcing for the newest model of something.
There is a crowdsourced card company.
Yeah.
There's it's called Local Motors, and they have actually released a vehicle, and the whole thing was crowdsourced. The engineering services were designed on an open source software model. So they had, like, engineers who donated engineering time, like automotive engineers, CAD modelers, you know, the designers, exterior designers, and you can go and buy the car.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's like an off-road kind of toy thing. It's called the Rally Fighter, but they're now doing their second vehicle. You go build it so that you can drive it and they don't have to go through. So in effect, it's a kit car. You go build it at their factory. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
There you go. Main topic.
Nice.
Nice.
We talk about Kickstarter a lot.
Yeah. Well,
it's
an interesting thing that is happening. Lots of people have stories.
Right, we're done with Kickstarter forever.
No.
Probably not.
That was the Escort Mission. Go to our website, theescortmission.com. Click on our Amazon link before you buy things at Amazon, and then we get some change for that, and it's awesome, and you don't pay any extra.
Speaking of which, how's that going? I haven't really checked it in months.
Pretty good.
Are people actually heeding our call?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, full disclosure, listeners, we've made somewhere between $150 and $200 over the course of the show.
Wow, we should, like, do something with that rather than just line up our coffers. No, but seriously, I mean, I don't know what, but I feel like something could be done with that.
Pizza party.
Right. Nice. For all our listeners. I mean, not. Oh, shit.
Given how few listeners that we have, we might be actually able to do it with $200.
Didn't I promise, like, Christmas gifts to our writers?
Writers?
To our mailbag.
Our mailers.
Mailers.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe. We'll have to think about that.
Anyway.
We should make a way to get our lav mics to work.
Send us email, mailbag, mail@theescortmission.com.
Should I make it mailbag? Would that be better?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. I'll make that an alias. There you go.
Both.
Mailbag. Mailbag at the Escort Mission.
Tweet to us. If I don't know if anyone will hear it. Do we look at our Twitter?
Well, occasionally people that we've mentioned, like the people who make your fine Argyle socks.
Uh-huh. Like us on Facebook. Yeah.
Like us on Facebook.
We should, if we got likes, that would be neat, huh?
We can use that to buy
review
more
us,
chocolate
if you're
cookies.
Gonna do something for us, review
iTunes,
us on iTunes.
Please.
That is the number one thing.
Because that actually raises our visibility in iTunes. Yeah, which is good.
And tell a friend. That is really the number one thing you can do. Tell a friend.
Tell people to listen, and send in ideas about stuff you wanted us to talk about and do shows about, because that's always helpful.
That's true. Otherwise, we'll just bullshit about our weeks.
Yeah, I'll just read something on the internet before the show, and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, we'll talk about more memes,
and more Kickstarter.
We'll come up with more lists that we can argue about.
Yeah. Yeah, send us lists to argue about. That's
good. My god. I think the autotune guys just keep like remixing, re-editing their things and reposting them with different end credits and stuff like that. So the I love cats, I love every kind of cat. You know that one?
No.
No.
The girl, the eHarmony girl.
Oh, yes.
Every kind of cat, yes. Like cats in hats. Like, I need to hug them all.
The person whose profile was all about.
I'm going to cry and break down.
Yeah, they edited all kinds of cute cat videos over that now.
Oh, nice. Man,
have you seen Vacuum Cat?
No, what's Vacuum Cat?
We'll watch it after the show. It's really good. It's a cat video. It's an internet cat video.
Maybe related to vacuums.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good week.
See ya.
Later.